This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Athletic Greens. Ensure your body gets the nutrition it needs. Athletic Greens has a special offer for our listeners. Just go to athleticgreens.com/Spartan, and then when you place your order, they'll send you a free travel pack with 20 individually wrapped packets. That's a free offer just for our listeners.
Welcome to Spartan Up Podcast. We're here on a gorgeous day at the Spartan Stadium race at Dodger Stadium. We got Joe DeSena. We got Tim Nye, we got Sephra, Johnny, Marion, Andrea, the whole crew, and we've got a great guest, this guy, Sanjay Rawal. All I want to say about him, because you're going to find out lots more great stuff, he made an amazing movie about a 3,100-mile foot race.
You might not know this, but we actually made the movie with him.
Cool.
Phenomenal. Yeah, you're in it.
Nice. Let's find out more.
Yeah.
We are here for Spartan Up. We're at Dodger Stadium. I'm with Sanjay Rawal, my new buddy. So check this out. I grew up in Queens. Everybody knows my mother got into yoga, meditation, health food in the 70s. And at some point in our childhood, she introduces us to this race. What's the name of the race? The Transcendence Run.
The Self-Transcendence.
Self.
3,100-mile run.
3,100-mile run. And when I think about Spartan and I think about how we got here, that introduction, that event actually help, even if it was behind the scenes in my subconscious, get this thing going called Spartan. You, out of the blue, a year or two ago, reached out to me. Tell me about your project where you want to create a documentary on this run, and started to tell me like the backstories and things you want to cover. And I was like, this is unbelievable. It's as if my mother's making the film. So we made a film. Here we are.
Having that kind of connection, you know, especially that personal connection, meant a lot to me. Everyone has good experiences with their mothers, at least at some point in their life.
Sure.
So the fact that, you know, the inspiration kind of came from your mother and your mother's kind of guidance of your childhood really, really touched me. But then it's like there's nothing that's kind of inspired me in a certain way in my mindset than the work that you've done. Like, I read your book, and we had a mutual friend that I don't know if I talked to you about, Swami Bua. He died at 120 years old, and he could blow a conch shell for like 3 minutes.
Supposedly 120,
we don't know. Yeah, we don't know. So I met him in New York in the mid-90s.
Wow.
And it's like he was the first person who really illustrated the idea of living beyond the physical.
Right.
And really transcending age. And in New York City, I had a spiritual teacher named Sri Chinmoy, who actually founded the 3,100-mile race.
Yeah, yeah.
And so like when we connected, it all kind of came full circle.
Did you spend any time at St. John the Divine's church?
I have.
Yeah. And did you, because of those connections?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's, I used to go there a lot as a kid because my mother's teachers were all there. So I actually want to do some filming down there because that church really has a lot of meaning for me. But let's talk about the movie. Tell us about the movie.
So I wanted to do a movie about the world's longest race, which is 3,100 miles.
Yep.
Participants are required to do about 60 miles a day for 52 days, and it all happens around a half-mile sidewalk loop in Queens in the summer.
Yep.
This is the 22nd year. But, making a film has to, you've got to show something that's really interesting and dynamic.
Sure.
And showing people meditatively running in circles isn't that exciting. So to kind of like amp up the visuals and really show people how and why this race is even possible, we have a Navajo narrative. We have a narrative with the San Bushmen, one of the oldest cultures in the world. They live in the Kalahari Desert in Botswana. And the Marathon Monks, whom I know you're very familiar with, the group out of Kyoto, Japan, that pick one person a generation to run 1,000 days. And if you don't finish your daily mileage, you have to kill yourself.
Yeah.
Stakes are high.
And a lot of people say I'm crazy with the stuff we do. And I think, you know what, I'm not crazy. There's lots of rituals in religions, and as well as the ethical part of a religion or the metaphysical part of religion. And so we're just talking about some, this is like a modern day religion, what you're describing, what we have in the background here.
It's true. What I learned from making this film, which took 3 years and took me around the world, was that the first form of prayer was with our feet. You know, we hunted. It's like we followed animals, we tracked, we foraged, and it's a chicken and the egg thing. Did we develop spirituality around that practice, or was it because of spirituality that we were able to hunt and gather so well? I spent time with the Bushmen, who are one of the oldest living hunters and gatherers still practicing. And they feel like the cosmology of hunting and man's essential nature and woman's essential nature are tied together. So running, moving was the first way that we as human beings communicated with the divine. It was the first way that we actually generated inner progress and experienced transcendence. I think we lost a lot of that, and it's taken, you know, races like the 3100, events and cultures like Spartan to remind humans of what we essentially are, physical beings connected to the divine through our bodies.
So you don't think we're getting that same connection through the couch and the remote control?
I guess if you're watching Spartan races all the time, you might get a little glimmer of that. But no, you know, they even say, right, and you guys are proselytizers of this, that, you know, your metabolism when you're sitting is slower than when you're sleeping. It's death. And we as human beings, we were always on the move. And when we lose that, we lose our connection to Earth. And when we lose that, we lose our connection to the heavens.
Yeah. So the movie comes out when?
The movie comes out in theaters starting August 17th. We're going to have a rolling release through the Southwest, through all the great athletic cities. We're going to be at the Spartan World Championships in North Lake Tahoe at the end of September, hit Chicago, New York, and there'll be full theatrical runs a week or two or three in each city.
How hard was it to make the film?
I got pneumonia on the very last day of shooting. It's like as soon as we wrapped, my body was like, okay, now it's time to get healthy again, and I'm going to lay you down. So it was really hard. The Bushman story in Botswana was one of the most challenging. The Bushmen have been hunting for 125,000 years, but about 20 years ago, the black Botswanan government discovered copper and other minerals on their ancestral territory, which is a desert. And that, you know, it provided them a reason to exclude, to kick out the Bushmen, to stop them, to prevent them from hunting to the present day when hunting is illegal. And so we flew into Botswana, we sneaked into the country with a couple of Bushmen guides who were willing to go on camera and show the ancestral persistence hunts, even at great risk. I mean, they could be thrown in jail. So we were basically evading park rangers, we were evading local government in order to capture a story that's kind of in its last chapter.
So it doesn't exist anymore?
It doesn't. You know, again, we've hunted.
Describe one of those hunts.
So traditionally, the only advantage that men and women had in the Sahara, I mean, like, look at us. It's like, you know, like we, you know, you and I don't look like Neanderthals. We weren't 6'5", you know, like we're these little guys in the Sahara, you know, competing against giraffe, wildebeest, lions, hyenas. We had no physical advantage. The advantage that we had was that we could carry water. Some people say it was endurance, but everything kind of had endurance. The advantage that we had was that we could carry water. And we didn't need to time our breath to our gait. If you're on 4 feet, it's like when you extend, you breathe in. When you push back, you breathe out. But we could breathe independently of our gait, so we could go long distances slowly. And so what the Bushmen and other cultures, you know, way back when hunters and gatherers did, was they tried to exhaust animals. We knew where the watering holes were, and we could carry water. So you'd see an animal, let's say a kudu, like an African elk. You'd chase it away from water. It would go off at 30 miles an hour. There's no way you're gonna be able to follow it except by tracking. So you're tracking it. You locate its tracks. You go into the area that blocks it from the next watering hole. You chase it away. After 2 days, the animal can barely walk because it hasn't been drinking, whereas you and your hunters have been drinking. The Bushmen didn't have long-range weaponry. They had poison arrows that could shoot a distance of 12 feet. So you'd have to get 12 feet away from the animal, kill it with a poison arrow. And if the animal was a giraffe, you know, you weren't going to be able to butcher a giraffe with your 600s and carry it back 2 days to your village. You know, you'd send a runner back 2 days and the village would move. And so it's like they were nomadic hunters and gatherers within a specific territory with multiple little village points. But they survived by being able to track and being able to run slow and long.
What was a normal distance for a Bushman to catch an animal?
You know, so these hunts would take 2 days and go upwards of 120 miles. And they're all barefoot. So we were with a team of Bushman hunters who were hunting underground. Like they did not want to be caught by rangers because they'd be shot on sight. So we went out with them. And after the first 12 hours, they found something worth hunting. They didn't want to get like little scrawny things. But by the end of 12 hours, you know, our team, we were exhausted. Like we were carrying cameras and I was carrying water and food and all this junk. They were carrying little bottles of water and no food whatsoever. So after about 12 to 14 hours, we ended up basically losing animals because we couldn't keep up with them. And plus the animals would see us in our sunglasses, in our Oakleys and in our Under Armour gear, whereas the Bushmen didn't have anything reflective. And so we had to settle for much smaller animals in the big game. Like they ended up seeing these little antelope and ended up tracking them and killing one of those. So it didn't take 2 days because we couldn't have lasted 2 days.
Did you end up eating some antelope?
So this is interesting. Like I'd always read that our advantage as hunters was by tiring animals out entirely. And we were with one particular hunter that was the best Bushman hunter. And it's like a fish story. Everybody told me, this guy can catch an animal by outrun, by chasing it down. He can run faster than an antelope. And it's like, I'm not gonna swear, but BS. Like, give me a break. Like, yeah, like I caught an 18-pound guppy. So we're with them. And he, at this stage, he kind of got sick of us because like we were slowing him down and we weren't really good hunters. And at one point, he saw these tracks that were apparently this antelope. And he ran super quickly towards this bush. This antelope jumped out. And the antelope, they can hit 40 miles an hour. The antelope took off this way. But the hunter, Gaolo, understood that at a certain point running up this hill, the antelope would cut down. So Gaolo actually chose his trajectory in a straight line. The antelope went this way, came down, and Gaolo tackled it and grabbed it. And we asked him, like, why didn't he like throw a little spear or an arrow at it? And he said, you know, we've got like 45 miles to walk home, and if I pierced the skin of this, there'd be blood everywhere. And so he said, I preferred to actually catch it by my hands and break its neck and carry it intact back to the village than to kill it with a spear. But we watched it and we saw it. And the problem with the filming was like he gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And so he couldn't necessarily outrun an animal in terms of velocity, but he could out-accelerate it, and he could figure out intuitively where it was going to run so that he would run a shorter distance.
That's awesome. All right, we're going to take a break. Let's go, you and I will catch a squirrel or something, and then come back. How's that?
I'll go get my poison arrows, and we'll get a couple of pigeons, too.
Hey, Spartan Podcast. We are here at the top of the gondola in Morzine, France. One of the most beautiful places I've ever seen in my life. And I think we're really lucky in the podcast. We get to go to amazing places all over the world, and we get amazing partners like Athletic Greens.
Yeah, no, we couldn't be any more blessed, right?
And I mean, friends like you guys.
Yeah, well, community.
Community.
The Spartan community.
Like a community of plants, and that's what's in our Athletic Greens.
And that's why you're here. That's beautiful. Talk to us about it.
Well, I don't know if you guys know what like dandelion is or burdock or chlorella and spirulina and reishi. And it's basically creating an edible forest of goodness for your belly, which is what we like to do. So we can go run around these edible forests
so
of goodness.
So this is good for your digestion?
It's good for your digestion. It's good for your brain. It's good for your heart. It's good for your relationships.
And clearly
it'll bring you love and luck.
And clearly it's good for your hair. Look at you.
Check out my lupin. These are wild lupins from the... Does anyone know what this is? Seeds. Okay, lupins, mostly poisonous except for one crazy species. Not in Athletic Greens, but...
So I just want to say something. I don't know that much about this stuff. I really don't. You know so much about all these plants. I don't need to know. That's
the more you
thing.
Know, the more you know you
so,
don't know.
So you forage all over the world. I don't. I go to my fridge. But this has
beginner's
been this has been foraged for us. I mean, it's 75 right. ingredients, all raw natural, sourced from all over the world. The stuff that I'm just not going to get in my day-to-day diet.
True.
And this is good for anybody.
100%.
Right? This is good for athletes. So all the Spartans up here. Yep. This is good for people of my age.
Sure.
This is good. You can give it to kids. You can
like
give it
Sephora.
To anybody.
See, this is even... Oh, look at that dog. This is even fast food. This is like fast food fuel. That's good for you. People
so,
can do it.
So it was Sephora having said, look at food. That dog. I always forget because I watch these on YouTube. I forget the people listen to these on iTunes. Okay. I just want to describe what's around us. We have the most incredible...
Alpine landscape.
Green with like evergreens and like you can see where the ski hills are. On the other side.
Red clover, white clover, ground cover.
The glaciers that are there year round. It really is quite spectacular. And apparently there's a little dog
nearby. Mountain bikers.
Yeah.
And women in lederhosen.
Parasailers.
We've got the European Championship going on.
For Spartan.
We've got some kind of little.
Your wife's here looking gorgeous.
We got
Andrea's always.
Anyway, got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
And in the middle of it all is Athletic Greens.
And I just want to say the great thing about it, we travel all over the world, and you don't always bring everything with you. These little travel packets. No, absolutely. These little travel
just
packets.
Bring enthusiasm.
If you're on a plane, you have it. If you're in a, you know, we get busy, right? You got to jump in the
on
cab.
On horseback.
You got to jump in the cab. You didn't have breakfast. You tear this open. You've got your water. You pour it in. It really is the most portable thing I've ever had.
I was going to say mobile, portable, same thing. Yeah. It's good
and
stuff.
And to be honest, like, we'll wrap this up here, but like, it's one of those green juices that doesn't give you a bellyache, because sometimes when it's all packed, like, you just feel good.
You
feel ready to run around the loop in fields of Morzine.
I just want to say I was being honest the whole time.
Yeah, I didn't need
I'm always honest.
I didn't need the caveat.
All right, Athletic Greens. Yum.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Athletic Greens. Ensure your body gets the nutrition it needs. Athletic Greens has a special offer for our listeners. Just go to athleticgreens.com/Spartan, and then when you place your order, they'll send you a free travel pack with 20 individually wrapped packets. That's a free offer just for our listeners.
All right. How can we apply some of the learnings? How long does this film take to make?
About 3.5 years.
How can we apply some of the 3.5 years of experiences and learnings to our own lives?
What I learned from making this film was that happiness is solely dependent on your physicality. In this day and age, if you're not making progress physically, if you're not challenging yourself physically, you're not challenging your mind and your heart. There's so few opportunities that we have being sedentary to really open our hearts up to higher energies and to higher learnings. At the same time, it's like that physicality can't just be like one run a week. It can't be just one race a year. It has to be like a day-to-day religion. And I learned from this film that running, that hunting, that hiking, that moving was religion for human beings for millions of years. And it, you know, we need to incorporate that aspect of physicality into our day-to-day lives.
They all said I was crazy. Millions of years, did you hear that?
I'm telling you, it's like, you know, you guys are called Spartan from a civilization that, you know, 2,000 years ago.
Yeah.
They didn't come up with that philosophy on their own. It's like they came up with that philosophy based on people that they'd known about for 1,000 years, 2,000 years, 10,000 years. In fact, the lineage goes back 1 million, 2 million years. And it's something that I think we've only lost in the last couple of hundred. And it's like, I don't think we're really gonna advance as a society and reach kind of levels of transcendence until we go back. People always like looking to the future, but if you don't understand what you've lost, you're never going to get to a full future. And I think that's what you guys represent. That's what you inspire in me and my filmmaking. And I saw that in all these cultures around the world as well.
You and I are like the Flintstones, and we're going up against the Jetsons.
Yeah, but it's like at the end of the day, it's like, you know, if you're Norma or whatever the other Jetson characters are and like a big mammoth stands in front of you, who do you want at your back? Do you want Fred Flintstone, or do you want, like, you know?
Who would be Barney, and who? I'm going to go with Fred. I'll be Fred. So we dove into the Bushman. We dove into what people could do in their everyday lives. Let's go into the run itself. What learnings can we take? You know, what'd you learn there?
So like, not everybody can be a Bushman, right? You're born a Bushman. You're born a Navajo. It's like to choose to be a Japanese monk will take like a decade. But it's like there are some things you can do. You can push yourself physically through Spartan. The Self-Transcendence 3100-mile race gives you a similar experience. People from around the world come to Queens every summer to try to do 60 miles a day for 52 days all around a half-mile loop. People say like that repetition would destroy my mind. I'd much rather run through the forest. But you know from the death race that if you know that you're going to have aid in certain places at certain times, you're able to separate yourself. If you know that, you know, you're able to have some consistency, you're able to separate yourself and go deep within. Or if the environment is totally beyond your control, you can do the same thing. So with the 3100, people come to this block in Queens, and in order to reach that mileage of 60 miles a day for 52 days, I think they have to like develop ways to actually get joy from the pain.
Find enthusiasm, create enthusiasm. I like to fake it. You'll smile through it, you crack jokes. Military, you use humor. Spartans use humor to get through the tough times.
And one of the main characters in the film is a Finnish paperboy. And he set the record at the 3100 at 77 miles a day in 40 days. he works in a very Spartan job. You know, he delivers papers, and he's done that for the last 20 years, 12 hours a day on his feet, delivering papers in the middle of the night in Finland, and that's his training. But he said the way he actually trains for this race is by understanding how to quickly move on from bad stimuli. Like when he gets a blister, it's like you've got to go beyond it with your mind. You have to find humor in the worst situations, and that allows you to move from problem to problem to problem and not get fixated. So in the run, you know, people are encountering things like weather, they're encountering blisters, they're losing weight, they're getting sunburned, they're aching, but it's like, the question for you is like, in those situations, how do people transcend that? How do people find joy in a physical situation that seems like it's gonna limit your progress?
Yeah, I'm lucky because I have ADD, and so my mind quickly gets off the blister or the, but a lot of people don't have that. And you've got to actually work at getting your mind off the negative and turning it into a positive.
And so these runners, I think most of their training is done before they hit the starting line.
Yeah.
It's like they have to understand how to be cheerful in the face of the worst problems. They have to learn how to be enthusiastic.
Which we should apply to our everyday lives, yeah. Right?
And it's like they train themselves in their day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And in fact, like the race organizers only choose people that have the right mental attitude.
Yeah.
Because no matter how physically superior you are, you're not gonna make it through a race like that, just like the death race. You're not gonna make it through right. Just based on your physique. You yeah. Have to have access to other tools.
You're awesome.
Thank you, sir.
Fun. I'm gonna go get a blister.
What a nice guy. And I like where his heart and where he tracks, like where his spirit goes, right? Because I mean, he's capturing great stories. I can just imagine like just annoying little kids just standing on the street corner for 3,100 miles, you know, like.
Throwing water balloons
or something. But,
I was one of those kids. And this whole thing happened. The reason we connected to him was when I was a kid, my mother, I grew up in Queens, my mother brought me to that race, the predecessor of the 3,100 mile, what it's called now.
Transcendence.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Descendant yeah. Transcended.
Well, I definitely transcended. And so it's very near and dear to me. So when I heard he was making this movie, wanted to make this movie, I said, we're all in. So yeah. Spartan got behind it, and that's how we ended up here. And he goes much deeper than this race in Queens. He goes out to look at the Marathon Monks, which you know we yeah. love, yeah. right? He goes out to see the
Kalahari Bushmen.
So the Kalahari Bushmen. So I've studied with a great naturalist called John Young, and he's one of the best trackers in the world, studied under the lineage of Tom Brown Jr. And basically, he's taken people out to the San Bushmen in the Okavango Delta because they're the best trackers in the world. They're such good trackers that they don't even need to see the tracks. You can almost see these spirit lines, the track of where like the animal's energy is gone. And if that sounds a little out there, I can understand that for most people. But when you're so tuned in, right, that he would always say, he would watch the Bushmen's children playing, and he's like, what's going on? Something's interesting here. I don't know. He's like, oh, they're playing silently. They would be playing full-on rowdy, raucous games with each other, right? But they were silent. Why? Because all the other elders of the tribe are paying attention to the bird language and what's going on, or else a lion can, you know, come up and sneak up on them. And, you know, so there's just kind of a different set of rules that you play by, and they're just extraordinary people. I've never been out there, but a perseverance hunt, I mean, he was talking about hunting the gray ghost, the kudu, right, which is the antelope, which is what they were talking about chasing, which are like some of the hardest things to track in the world. I want to see a kudu so badly.
Before you go, Johnny, I just want to say, I wasn't so blown away with that, even though it seems impossible to track by foot an animal, because you know the story in Vermont where I had that guy working in the backyard with a backhoe, and he dove off the backhoe. He tackled a deer by hand and killed it with a handsaw.
A deer is different than the gray goat, Joe.
There's no such thing tracking and happening upon. That was happening upon. It's a whole different kind of hunting.
Oh, yeah, I love that story. You've been told that story forever.
What I want to say about that tracking, because incredible story. He talks about, you know, chasing the animals away from the water, following them. They can run a lot faster, but they can't carry water, so you just keep them away from water.
It's like the death race.
But, exactly, keep them away from water. But I loved when he said that they couldn't recreate it with them there. He said, because the Bushmen do it right. We're there filming them. We've got our Oakley sunglasses on, our reflective clothing. He said, so they couldn't catch the animal that they were trying to catch. And they actually had to settle for some smaller animals. But I loved sort of the humility when he's like, I get that we ruined their hunt, you know, that we can't just show up.
Because they were a disruptive force.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Changed all the energy of everything,
yeah.
right?
Right.
But, you know, and he talked about the reason humans survive, the reason we evolved, not because we're stronger, not because we're bigger, not because we're faster, but because we learned how to do it. And, you know, you talk a lot about grit and resilience in business, and you talk about parenting and all these things that are these endurance sports. You know, raising a kid is an endurance sport. But the idea that persistence and the idea that you got to figure out what works and do it, and maybe sometimes it means it's going to take a lot longer than you thought it was, and so many people don't succeed because they stop. They get that first hurdle and they stop. You know, they lose sight of the antelope and they stop.
Well, persistence would be a lot easier if we weren't in the first world, right? If we back up 1,000 years, you had no choice but to be persistent.
Sure, yeah. And now everything's delivered to you. Uber right. Eats, right?
But the smart part about that is you said that they wouldn't catch the antelope, but he said what they did was he went 90-degree angle to it, right? Because he knew that it was going to come, but then it was going to come back around, right? So in business, if you can have... We're talking about the long odds or the long game of it. If you can see, you know it's going to be a difficult part, but you know at some point it pivots, and be prepared for that at that end, then maybe you win the day and you get the gray ghost.
So regardless of your environment, learn how to read the signs.
Yeah.
Or as Wayne Gretzky, the Canadian, would say.
Yeah, he talked about religion. I thought that was interesting. Wait, good point, Marion.
Wait, what about Wayne Gretzky? Say Wayne Gretzky first, Johnny.
Or as Wayne Gretzky, the great Canadian, would say, don't go to where the puck is.
Right, where it's going.
Figure out where the puck's going to go and go there.
Right. Yeah.
Joe, you were talking about religion and the idea about how that changes.
Yeah, like for me, right, religion, I got really focused on the rituals. But he was talking about the first real religion was run with our feet, right?
Yeah, yeah,
and get
yeah.
out there and get still, in a sense, even though you're moving. Like, yeah. That was a religious experience. And so I thought that was interesting.
I think it's probably fair to say from an anthropology standpoint that the further we moved away from nature when we became settlers and farmers rather than hunter-gatherers, we had to start creating stories, because you didn't need a story when you got up every day and went looking for that animal and everything else, right? So recorded history is when we, as far back as we know, there was religion. And so, yeah, there's something to be said for that. Yeah, for the religion is in the woods.
Well, you don't need entertainment.
Sure, that's
when
right.
When you're trying to survive.
Yep.
Well, that is entertaining.
I don't know. No, I've never had
unless,
to
unless you're really hungry and
when
you can't catch the animal.
And you were talking about thousands of years ago. You're talking about you have to stay singularly focused mm-hmm. on that tracking, so you don't need entertainment and distraction.
There's your meditation right
that
there.
That is it right there.
Yeah, you're meditating on right. finding that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and then to your point, to bring it back to seeds for a second, is when we went from hunter-gatherers to agricultural societies, it was because we were able to take teosinte and make it into corn that or maize that you can harvest. It's when you can get those seeds that were able to produce enough food that you were able to be like stay in one place. Mm-hmm. And when you were able to have the food that could provide for enough of a civilization, that's when you have the luxury to spend more time with music, spend more time with art, spend more time yeah. with storytelling. And so it's all
spend more time doing Spartan races at Dodger Stadium.
Spend more time doing Spartan races at Dodger Stadium, yeah. But I think he's got a great... He's got a great eye. He's got a great vision. We're all really excited to see the movie.
Yep.
And come see us at spartan.com/podcast.
Check us out on YouTube. Sure. Sign up. And toodles.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Athletic Greens. Ensure your body gets the nutrition it needs. Athletic Greens has a special offer for our listeners. Just go to athleticgreens.com/spartan. And then when you place your order, they'll send you a free travel pack with 20 individually wrapped packets. That's a free offer just for our listeners. Thanks for listening to another epic story of success. If you like our show, be sure to tell your friends about it. We want to hear from you. Just leave us a comment below if you're watching on YouTube. Or if you're listening, go to Twitter and find us at Spartan Up Pod or Instagram at Spartan Up Podcast and let us know what you think. Then go subscribe on iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to our show. Spartan Up is brought to you by Spartan Race. To find a race near you, visit Spartan.com.